emergency schedule. Remember, just housekeeping matters. Yesterday, in fact, you remember last week we did indicate that we had received a report from NMC and that's not my fault, another one sent me 10 emails. That we have received reports by the NMC and the Department of Agriculture on the food price monitoring, and on that basis we had preliminary conversation with the two and considered to have a portfolio committee meeting tomorrow for the report to be presented to the portfolio committee and all that. Now, the DG of Agriculture is not in the country. The Chief Operating Officer is the acting DG. The General Manager responsible for food pricing is also out of the country. The CEO of NMC as well is out of the country.
Who's in the country?
We are here.
So we can go and take over. Well, this is agriculture. They can hold their apartment. So the consequence of it is that we had to reschedule the tomorrow's meeting to January. We had thought that we'd have it now so that when they come back home, we're able to explain to our constituency why they can't pull their trolleys for the Christmas shopping. So we're unable to do that. But we'll consider that later in the year. I'm sure the draft program should be capturing that hearing. So the consequence of it is that tomorrow we will not meet as we earlier thought we would. So that's one thing. Now we've got agriculture, at least for today. The difficulty with being new is that you must always introduce yourself. So, I'm new as well, so. I'm Ruben Mutalawa. Not so far extent am I new, I feel old already. Hopefully I'm not holding, so. I'm Ruben Mutalo, I'm the chairperson of the portfolio committee. So you can then introduce your team.
Thank you very much, Chair. My name is Tipo Kumalo, chairperson of Agriculture. And on my right hand side, Mr. Jack Bandage, the vice chairperson of Agriculture. And on my left hand side, of course, Machiel van Niekerk, who is the chief executive officer of Agriculture. Thank you.
Okay. So, having done that, without any waste of time, let's take and table the report.
Chair, thanks for the opportunity. We have prepared a presentation for you. This will be the one to the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture and Land Affairs, the 20th November 2007. Chair, first of all, the profile of our employer is interesting. When we talk about the size there, it refers to the numbers of employees in the service of that particular company. So if we say 150 and more, that would imply 150 more employees. And in that particular grouping, we have 289 companies. Remember, Jay, morning, remember, Jay, we represent the primary agriculture as well as the secondary agriculture. In other words, the handling of the produce as well as the production of that. The size of the company is between 50 and 149 employees, 687 companies, 1 to 49, that is where the bulk of our companies lies, 2,551, with a total of 3,527. Can I repeat, Chair? 3,527 companies paying the levy, the 1% skills development levy, in the total primary agriculture sector as well as the secondary agriculture. Of those 3,527, about 2,770 represents the primary agriculture, in other words, the farmers themselves. 2,770 more or less. Now you would see there in the round circle at the bottom, it dropped from 9,364 to that 3,527. The reason being that that threshold of 300,000 rand has been lifted to 500,000 rand. Remember, you only pay the levy when your total salary in wage bill is above 500,000 rand per annum. In terms of the sector itself, Chair, now it's difficult to say whether those figures are 100% correct, but we are working on a commercial side of around about 40,000 commercial farmers, enterprises, 750,000 employees, and that would include permanent workers as well as seasonal workers, Chair. On the small scale, Chair, it's very difficult to tell. We are working on a figure which we have received from the Department of Labor, National Department, of 400,000 plus their dependents. On the secondary side, Chair, it's around about 250,000 employees, mostly permanent people. Chair, the second page, the funding. Remember, this is the funding that we are receiving from that 3,527 companies. We are receiving 136 million. That is the total 1%. In other words, the total that they are paying is 136.5 million. That was last year's figures, which go 20%. The NSF goes to the NSF. That would represent 28.5 million rand. The NSF, it stands for the National Skilled Fund. It's a fund which is kept by the Department of Labor, and you can put in a request for certain funding windows, as they call it. In other words, not all issues that are being funded, and it is only directed towards the unemployed people. Then of the 136, the 20%, then 10% we can use for admin. You will see that ours is 15.6. The reason being, we also receive a support from the Departments of Agriculture nationally as well as provincially, and that is around about 2 million rand, which we are allowed to use for admin. Then in terms of, you have a mandatory grant, Chair. If you pay 100,000 rand per annum and you complete a so-called workplace skills plan as well as a report plan in terms of what you've done with regard to training, you can get outright 50% of the funds back that you have paid. In other words, if you do that and you are paying 100,000 rand, in terms of your 1%, you could get 50% of your money back, 50,000 rand. And then we have a, last year, we also have a NSF project which we gave 8.9 million to, and that was in terms of learnerships. Now, Chair, when you look at the bigger picture, what we are saying here, and I think that is the bottom line, so-called, 3,527 employers contributing, they contribute in total 136 million. Now, we are not the smallest CETA. I think forestry is, this point in time, forestry, but we are one of the smallest CETAs. And we have to serve the agricultural sector. Now, remember, when you look at the CETA, it's not just those people who are contributing. We are also obliged to serve those who are not contributing, but I would get to that later on, and surely the Chair and the Vice Chair would like to make some remarks about that. The SLA, the so-called service level agreement, the discretionary fund allocation, 5 objectives, and with various success indicators. We have 12 success indicators there. That is, the indicators were set down by the Department of Labor through a process of NEDLAC. Underperformed on 3 of them. The overall rating by the Department of Labor is 104% out of a possible 125%, so to speak. Chair, in terms of those that we underperform, the one that we are going to would like to discuss with you to a certain extent is the whole question with regard to ABIC. You know the situation, especially in primary agriculture. Our information shows that about 43% of the people are illiterate, and we are spending a lot of money on ABIC. But although we are spending a lot, we would not be able to make a target, because the target is to train people on ABET level 4. Now, ABET level 4 is equivalent to the old standard 7, or nowadays grade 9. And I mean, in agriculture, it's just impossible. We won't ever be able to reach that target unless we put in a lot of effort, and that would also mean a lot of money. In terms of the skills and the critical skills, Chair, I'm not going to look at that in detail. I've included in the pamphlet, here's a skills and critical skills guide for you, which stems from our sector skills plan. In other words, it's information that we have received from the subsectors on the primary side, but also on the secondary side, like sugar, tobacco, poultry, and so forth. But the most critical skills, especially on the primary side, is farm management, literacy, and numeracy. And when you look at the secondary side, Chair, you'll find that technical skills such as artisans, engineers, and technicians, and we have invested a lot of funds in those particular areas. The overall equity to be obtained, that's part of the our objectives, is 85% black, 54% women and 4% disabled. In the terms of the 85% black, we have overperformed. Female, we are close to the target, working on a 48% where that we have trained in terms of the 54%, and underperform have to engage in a special project to attract disabled. I think, as you know, Chair, when you look at agriculture, it's not so easy to attract disabled people, especially on the primary side. But we are doing that in that particular area, but not sufficient this point in time. Page 3, Chair, the large-scale projects within CETA that we had run last year and this year as well, most of them, ABIC, the total value is around about 30 million rand. Now remember, Chair, the money that we can spend is what we call discretionary funds. Our total discretionary fund per annum is round about between 40 and 45 million rand. That is what we can spend per annum, and where the board has a say in terms of how we should direct it. And of that, about 30 million we've already spent on ABIC. At this point in time, we are running 2 programs, Chair. The one is a computer-based electronic program, and you would be surprised how good it is going, where we have 20,000 learners which have been secured. At this point in time, we have 10,000 bumps on seats, so to speak. In other words, 10,000 people, they are taking part on the ABET program. What we are doing, we are supplying the computers, we are supplying the software, we are capacitating the facilitator, And the only thing the farmer has to do is to look at the venue where they can store the computers and pay the facilitator. At this point in time, we are having about 10,000 learners who are taking part of that. And then also we have the old chalk and talk doing it, 5,000, the so-called face-to-face learners. Under learnerships, we have 10,000, more or less there. See, if we talk about a learnership leads to a qualification. This point in time, we have 49 qualifications registered with SAQWA from AgriSikasai, and there are also 4,000 young people in learnerships, or what we call the unemployed. We are looking at people younger than 35 years of age. Skills programs, it varies between 15 and 20,000, because we can't put an exact figure, because sometimes you do find that that same person would attend two skills programs, and then you might find yourself a bit mixed up. That's why I was saying between 15 and 20,000. The BIWA, as we call it with an AgriSika chair, the board decided to set bursaries aside. It's 30,000 rand per annum per learner, bursaries, internships. In other words, you will find that some of the training, especially at the University of Technology or the old Technicons, where we support that person, we'll pay the farmer 30,000 rand per annum to take on such a student to gain that experience as part of his diploma or degree. Then we have workplace experience. Our experienced chair is, and the vice chair, they are also now looking at such a project from their view in the Western Cape, where people might have a diploma or even an engineering degree, but you'll find they can't find a job because the employers would say, listen, you don't have the experience. So we are paying the employer now 30,000 rand also per annum to take on such a learner for a period of 1 year, so that person can, he or she can gain experience in that particular area. And then also we have apprenticeships. You know very well, we have recently moving back to apprenticeships. In fact, we are planning to roll out, as from the 1st of January, more than 250 apprenticeships throughout agriculture. That would include tractor mechanics, or technicians as they call them nowadays, electricians, millwrights, boiler makers, and so forth. And we are supporting those projects, just for interesting sake, 72,000 rand for a period of 2 years, so that person then can qualify as a craftsman. Then skills and critical skills, I will run through them very quickly, but as I've said, you have a booklet here, a folder that is pointing out the different skills and critical skills in agriculture. The human capacity side is ABET, problem solving, numeracy and literacy. Now, interesting enough, which is actually very scary and hair-raising when you look at that, is that of the 10,000 seats on bumps, we have round about, can I put it this way, less than 300 people who's taking on numeracy. Most of them are only taking on literacy. So those people, they only take on literacy, but they don't take on numeracy. I mean, it's actually hair-raising to say you have 10,000 people and only of about 250 odd of them is taking on numeracy. What we have done is the board took a decision to say that, sure, you can do literacy 1 and 2, ABET, but if you want to go to 3, you have to go to numeracy 1. Otherwise, you won't be able or allowed to move on. Management and agribusiness skills, farm management, business and financial management, marketing environment. Chair, you find it very often that people know how to grow the process in terms of preparing the soil, planting and harvesting, but really when you look at the marketing side of it, they are usually very poorly informed. So we are looking at that. That's part of most of our qualification. And then also information technology. Readiness and responsiveness to global markets. You know, in fact, yesterday I read in the paper that the ostrich meat, there is a possibility that they could ban that in terms of the European Union. So we are offering traces of food safety and standards, traceability, information technology, safety, food quality and assurance. Capacity of providers, Chair, it's a huge problem. At the moment we have 167 accredited providers, but you do find that some of them, that they just meet the minimum requirements, and we would like to push it up so that we know that the training that is being offered, that it meets the minimum requirements. So we look at technical skills, agricultural engineers, production and process engineers, technicians, the sector specialists. Chair, on the last page, the dilemma which we are sitting with, and may I state it up front, this dilemma is not a dilemma of the agricultural sector, education and training authority, the AgriSeca. It's the dilemma of agriculture. And we are going to be very blunt about it, Chair, because I think we have sufficient experience and knowledge that we can say we are setting up farmers for failure. We, may I repeat it, Chair, we are setting up farmers for failure. Especially when you look at those non-contributors. Those bigger units, the commercial side, only those who are contributing. I mean, if we agree to the fact that there might be something like, say, 30,000 so-called commercial farmers, only a very, very small group of them who's really contributing in terms of food production. You probably find that the guys who are paying toll with us, the 2,700, they probably produce 80% of all the produce. So the rest, and especially not even talking about the land reform projects which we are involved with, we are setting those people up for failure. Why am I saying that? It is expected of the AgriSeca to support with a little amount of between 40 and 45 million to support those people in terms of whether they have received the land through land restitution or whatever the case might be, to support them to make a success of their project. Chair, it's impossible. We won't be able to do it. We are failing this point in time. We need a long-term strategy for agriculture. Can I repeat again? It's nothing to do with the CETA. Yeah, surely we are part of it and we would like to make a contribution. But really to make a success of it, it's out of our hands. And the reason being from our side, limited funds. We would need a long-term agreement to say, let's focus on those people in such a way that we can add value and reducing the possibility that they might not make a success of their farming ventures as such. So what we have done from the CETA side, and it's a decision that the board has taken already in last year October, that we try and first of all understand what is going on in that particular areas so that we can make inputs, and furthermore that we can give the information to those people like yourself who can really make a difference in terms of what the situation is like and what we possibly can do. See, you have in your file a document, motivation for additional funds and or alternative training funding model for the agricultural sector. It's a very 9-page document, Chair, but I can assure you it could change the lives of many people if you can first of all read it, understand it, make it yourself, and that we can work together to see what we can do. Chair, when you look at agriculture, and especially point two, the agricultural sector perspective, when you look at these numbers, you'll find that it's very much the same as what I've given to you on the first page of my presentation. The bottom line is that there is not sufficient money to support these people. Furthermore, if we would really like to make it a success, we should work together. AgriSeca on its own, it's just one pillar of the bigger picture. We need the support of the Department of Agriculture, which we do get, but I mean in terms of specific projects. We need the support of DTI, Department of Trade and Industry. We need the support of the extension officers. All of us have to work together really to make a contribution to these farmers. You'll find it very interesting, Chair, to know that when you talk about subsistence farmers and small farmers, whichever way you would like to define them, you'll find that only 10% of their income derives from their farming activity. Those are the things that surely you as a portfolio committee, I would think, will have to discuss to say, if you want to raise that income to 12%, to 15%, what would it take to make a difference in terms of input that you will have to do? It might even be viable to say, let's change it to a social grant, because it might cost much less. I'm moving to right to the other side. All I'm trying to say is, Chair, we will have to discuss those things, because these decisions is not within the agri-SITA to take. In fact, most of them are actually political decisions that have to be taken. But I'm going to ask ask the Chair and the Vice Chair to make the input here, Chair, so that we, if there is time, maybe discuss it. We have a few suggestions which we can make, so that hopefully, in terms of what we have done, I think for the funds that we have available, we did fairly well. There are still areas which we would like to sort of focus on, or more focus on, and to get a better understanding of it and make a better contribution. But surely, I think on average we have done well, and I think part of the reason is that I'm working with a board which, although it is representatives from labor and employers, we are working together as a team to the extent that, Chair, and I'm saying it with pride, that we haven't voted since, I can remember, 18 December 2003. Since then, we are working on a consensus basis. If we do have agreements, we rather say, let's tackle it in another way, discuss it informally, until we can find a solution. But see,
just to add, Chair, on what the CEO has outlined for the committee, it is important for us in Agri-SITA to extend our invitation to this particular committee to assist us in the endeavors that we are trying to do in order to deliver the mandate in terms of the national priorities on some of the issues that we are faced up with. I think what has been highlighted is the fact that we are trying everything as a CETA to deliver on the mandate that we are supposed to deliver on. But we are highlighting to this particular committee to take note of the difficulties and the challenges. For an example, you have heard that out of the discretionary funds that we are supposed to utilize as a CETA, almost 90% is spent on ABET. And it is very important for us to try and persuade this committee to assist us in this area. For an example, you know that agriculture is important in terms of the only sector that is directly linked to the people who are on the rural areas, the very poor of the poor. And if there was any priority that is being made to deal with the rural areas, the poverty in rural areas, it is agriculture that has got access. It is in fact the particular sector that should be taken into consideration when you look at how we can make an inroad in terms of the problems with poor people in rural areas. The effort aspect is that when you firstly understand what is discretionary grant, I must try and explain that, because there is what
the CEO has referred to as mandatory grants, but secondly, there is discretionary grants. If employers were to contribute to the CETA and do all what they are required to do, firstly, to come up with the workplace plan, and secondly, to train according to the plan and report that they have done the training, they will get all their money back, which will mean that the CETA will remain with zero funds on the discretionary grant side. Now, this is important in terms of asking this particular committee to assist us in terms of looking for alternative funding in order for us to be able to deliver on the mandate. For an example, on the AFED side, to deal with the literacy problem that the CEO has alluded to. It's very difficult to put people on the learnership and all the other courses if those people in fact will not be able to go through the programs of the short courses or in the programs of learnership. So we need this money for dealing with the area of AIDS, but we don't have enough funds to address the particular area in order for you to assess that this particular feature has delivered in terms of the learnership and in terms of the short courses. Because that we cannot do, firstly, without having to get people to the level of where they can be able to be put on this program. That is very important that we want this particular committee to help us, to partner with us in terms of looking for alternative funding. This is just one but very important area that I think the committee must understand. But also that there is a huge responsibility in terms of land reform beneficiaries, which is a huge area for government to deal with. And this particular sector has got that particular responsibility to say, government has, for an example, given people land where they would be able to start their own projects. And therefore, AgriSETA expected to train, to assist in terms of training for the land reform beneficiaries. But we don't have the money to do so, as you have seen, how small the income that we have as a CETA. It is not possible that we can be able to do what we are expected to do with the funds that we have. It is also very important for us to mention that we currently have an option in terms of asking for alternative funding in terms of the National Skills Fund. But the National Skills Fund also has got its own procedures that are being followed. They also manage it in a certain way that when you are asking for funds in the National Skills Fund, you have to mention specific projects. They either give or not give. And when we make those applications, we are treated like any other feature. We are looked at in the same manner the other features are being treated. But other features have got huge base of income. They have huge income as a feature. They can afford. But this particular feature who cannot afford, there is no particular specific treatment or approach to deal with this particular feature. We think that it will be important for the committee understanding these dynamics and these difficulties and challenges that we are facing to assist in terms of us to convince the particular people involved that we should at least get a certain treatment in terms of this. We are talking with other ideas as well that we would want this particular committee to consider and maybe take further if you are also convinced that there is a need for something to be done about this particular feature. For an example, we believe that in AgriSETA we have argued and came to sort of a consensus that, for an example, it would be better that some funding should be sourced from fiscal, particularly for AgriSETA. For an example, if an issue of effort is a priority issue, if an issue of land reform beneficiaries is a national priority, how come that we cannot get funds from fiscal to deal specifically with those areas? Because no other sector has got such a huge responsibility. No other sector has got such a challenge.
They can get the 1% from employers and they can do everything they are expected to do. They don't have these kind of peculiar nature, these kind of dynamics that we have in agriculture for them to deal with, but only agriculture. So these are the things that we think if the committee can understand, you are at the door of at the decision makers, you are also part of the decision makers. We think that if you can assist us to put forward this kind of understanding to say, let's get other sorts of funding as the agriculture to be able to deliver. You can see we have done everything. There are a few areas where we've not been able to deliver, and we are not below the marks that have been allocated in terms of the assessment that has been done by the Department of Labor. We're getting good results on the whole, and in overall we can say the CTA is performing, but we are concerned because there are very critical areas that we will be running short of funds in order for us to deliver on. That is what I think, Chair, I would like to mention. My colleague,
thank you, Chair. I've been wondering if I should try and add anything. Perhaps only a summary of what has been said. And I will do this by referring to the good news and the bad news. The good news, Chair and Committee, is that the CETA can and does deliver. It has built up a very good record of service delivery. The bad news is that the structure of funding does not allow us to take that service beyond the employers who contribute, where the real needs are. That's just a summary of what my colleagues have said. What are we asking, Chair? We are asking this committee, in their wisdom, to give us access to the decision makers, that will give us access to other sources of funding outside the structure of the Skills Development Act, whether it be from the central fiscus or wherever, Department of Agriculture. That, Chair, is my summary of our presentation to you today. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Tim. I agree. I've already noted to ask. Honorable Van Niekerk, what is the relationship with Mashiach? And Mantuli, Dali, and Singh. Oh, Mamkwina.
Thank you, Chair, because I just remember there were two Funikers. One Funiker is actually named after, actually, a Honamaba because he doesn't go to church.
Okay. You got it, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. I think really training is the and the acquiring of skills is an important thing in South Africa. But without going into detail, I understand and I appreciate your presentation. But you made an interesting comment. We're putting up farmers for failure. Now, is that just a general statement, or you are involved with training people on farms? I hope that's not where you actually where you say that you're training them to fail, because that's a small portion. I'd like to hear from you the successes you had with that training on that small portion that you had, and you identified the shortcomings of the rest of the need for agriculture in terms of reform action, of restitution, and new farmers, and I think you understand quite the number of new farmers there are. There are not only 100 or 200,000. I think there are many more than that. How do you see the theta, the role, in connection with the other actions? Where does a specific shortcoming lie in your number of people to transfer the skills, or does it lie in the fact that the Department of Agriculture, the Agricultural Research Council, the Department of Land Affairs, that they do not comply to, they give people a piece of land to farm on, but there's nothing more? How do you see a picture of how these two, the training, the identifying of farmers, and the need, what have you got in mind when you say we are training farmers or people to fail? How would you reverse that in terms of your experience?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also join my colleague and say thank you for the presentation. You know, as this committee, we have an oversight role to play. Now, as you said that we are setting farmers to fail, I thought to cry was reading my mind. And you don't give us a strategic plan. We don't have a strategic plan in place to say, this is the plan, this is what I want to do as the future to enable the farmers to be successful. You don't do that. You just say we are setting farmers to fail. But without a strategic plan, we won't be able even to fight for more funds because we don't have a strategic plan in place. And secondly, Chairperson, on the issue of care skills, critical skills, you mentioned management, agricultural management, you mentioned marketing and so on, engineering and so on. My question would be, in order to produce that capacity, which university are you working with, or an agricultural college, or other FET colleges that you are working with? And secondly, your relationship with the provinces and local government. Mm-hmm. How do you relate to them? And what type of curriculum do you provide? Do you have a standard formula, or everybody just training the way it is right? Or upon habit? I don't know whether I'm right, but on habit, a lot of people who are doing habit, especially with UNISA, are paying a fee. I don't know what is your relationship with UNISA and the curriculum that UNISA is using on that particular issue. And you also mentioned that you are paying 30,000 rand per year for those that provide that particular training. I think it's a farmer. Right. Now, you didn't tell us how many you have on your roll, or you just paying at random. On the 20,000 learners computer aided and 5,000 face-to-face learners, what is the geographic spread? What is the geographic spread on that? And if you can just indicate to us on how many are they per province. And lastly, Chairperson, You also talked about short courses. How short are those courses? And after the course, is there a follow-up to check on whether that those people are progressing or what? And what is it that the people are getting after the short course? Did you make an assessment to find out whether the short course did have a positive impact on the people that you have been training? Then let me not become like that.
You're halfway there.
Hopefully you have answered some of his questions, so it will be brief.
Thank you, Captain. Maybe I have to join my colleague. But when the presenter was talking about setting farmers to fail, I could see the body language from Menir Krai that is very happy about that terminology. But then we received that. But I could see his movement immediately once he mentioned that. That maybe you may unintentionally play in his views on understanding of the situation, because I see he mentioned the situation in particular. But there's a perception, if I may say that perception, that most of those who took the land free of charge from our fellow compatriots, they are very enjoying setting farmers to pay. But anyway, let me start for page 59 of your annual report. On page 59, on paragraph 2.4.1, you are raising there the monitoring. I want to focus there that the quality of training has been a grave concern in the agriculture sector. If there's been a grave concern, as agri-teacher, can I be protected a person from Nell and Cry? You mind trying to turn off your phone? I mean, your, what you call your mic? Thank you.
Well, that is a soft thing.
In terms of this grave concern, maybe linked to what Comrade Mansour was saying in terms of your strategy plan to address that grave concern. But let me address myself on the that particular paragraph when you raise that mainly SMEs which operate in rural areas, which I think is one of the areas which I think is to be complaining. But if I'm correct in that particular paragraph, I'm also advised that most of the accredited training providers are based in Western Cape and Gauteng. Can you please comment on that? Because I presume that since that has been identified, then even the accredited service providers will be spread around. Maybe you can give us the breakdown of those service providers in terms of the area they're there. The other issue on same page 59, bullet point number 3 on your far right hand side there, you see to evaluate the quality of learning provided. Can you just tell us, in your evaluation, what did you find? What impact that evaluation has in terms of your strategy? The last bullet point also says that access is degree to which access after there is access of mobility progression and redress have been enhanced. One if you can also address then in terms of that particular analysis of your report. Second, let me deal with page 61 of your report. If you can also advise us or address us on page 61. There are two columns on the far right again, under the subheading, disclosure of remuneration, treasury regulation 28.1. There are two columns there, which fees for services and subsistence and a reversive travel. If I'm looking under the board members, in terms of that particular list there, I just identified 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6. If I may call the board members, which are paid for the service rendered and also for the subsistence reimbursement. Can you please address us in terms of what type of services that are rendered to these board members that can be paid
separately from the reinvestment and the substance allowance that are being paid. For example, if I look at the professor there, Prince Law, then if you look there, it's 89,000 for fees for services and 30,000 for substance and reinvestment travel. I'm not going to dwell on a number of them, but I've just identified 26, I've identified 30, 27, 14, 89, and 35. No communal names. And the other column, which is 30, and 10, 18, 25, and all those things, which you include. This includes for 30% individuals, 119,000 rand and 425 cents in terms of combining both. If you can quickly address us in terms of that particular issue, because it looks like it's a great concern. Under the finances, of course, there is also in advance. I'm just trying to check the page, maybe you keep notes of your report, where you refer to the entertainment fee. I've been advised that the entertainment fee has increased from the previous financial year, 2005-2006, which was, I believe, was 9 months, to 57,000 rand in 2006-2007. If you can also address us in terms of that particular issue, so that you get to understand exactly the situation at stake in terms of that particular issue. Lady Chairperson, let me end there, because Congressman Tulu said that she should not speak much. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Singh.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, let me also say we appreciate the presentation that has been made. And I think I just want to follow with other members. You know, the importance of the agricultural sector to the economy of our country is something that we talk about every day. The President talks about it, we all talk about it. And in fact, in the current times, with the looming interest rate increase, largely due to food inflation, which makes up almost 50% of the 6% inflation figures, I mean, this sector is one sector that needs to have all the support that it can have. Now, my concern here is, the CETA is making a presentation to us, but in the presentation, which we should be looking at their failures and successes for 2006-2007, they're also making a plea for additional funds for forthcoming years. And maybe we require another forum for that, when we're looking at our budgets for next year and things like that, and the MTF, we can look at your additional requests. But what is of concern is, you know, the statement, we are setting up farmers for failure. What I'd like to know is what kind of interaction is there between the Agri-CETA, the Department of Land Affairs, the Department of Agriculture, and DTI. Are there roundtable meetings like this where they sit and say, this is what we do, this is what you should be doing, now let us combine our resources, both human and financial, to get the best benefit for the farmers out there? I don't think that is happening. And if that's not happening, I mean, it's a serious cause for concern that it's not happening. When it comes to training, I mean, we've heard a lot about ABIT, but ABIT's not the only thing that, you know, the agri-seeker should be looking at. There's lots of skills. I mean, there are farmers. We don't want our farmers to be laborers all their lives. We want them to become owners of farms. We want them to become veterinarians. We want them to become scientists. We want them to become everything else. What kind of support do the CETAs give to people in that regard? Are there different levels of support to different people with different educational status? Also, when it comes to ABET, now, Department of Education spends hundreds of millions on ABET programs. Probably their curriculum is a little different. Other departments, every department that you get an annual report, there's ABET. What kind of coordination is there to ensure that, you know, we're all singing from the same hymn book, we are attracting and attacking people that really require the kind of training that they want. Now, we also see that there are a number of assessors that are trained. And I take Comrade Gandhi's point there, that it seems Western Cape and Gauteng are the biggest beneficiaries of our training programs. And whereas the poorest of the provinces, I mean, Eastern Cape is one of the poorest provinces in the country. There's KwaZulu-Natal, if you look at poverty. And also, if you look not only in terms of poverty, but if you look in terms of potential for agricultural development. They've got land, they've got water, they've got people. but they don't have sufficient skills. So just like AgriCita and Manjuli's comment about what is the strategic plan and vision of AgriCita to make it a useful tool in ensuring that farmers of this country can receive the kind of training and support that they want. I'll just stop there and maybe let someone come back. Thank you.
Mamkuna.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also thank the presenter for their presentation, and also thank for the good plan found in the package. Honorable Chairperson, I think my questions about two of them were covered. The one was on setting up farmers for failure. It has been dealt with thoroughly in question formulas. And then the second one is on the, it was also touched by Mamanju. I also wanted to know the linkages with other learning institutions to provide for quality assurance. It has been touched. And then maybe my question here, earlier on in page 2, mention was made that there are 3,527 companies. One would like to know as to whether are these institutions or entities contributing towards aggressive? If yes, how could we get some more information on these companies? If it's vice versa, it's still okay, then we can be given some more information on this one. Thank you, Chair.
Mr.
Lim? Thank you, Chair. Just two small questions. The first one is on the apprenticeships. Where are you doing this? At what location? Have you got enough locations to do this? And if the persons you teach there for the apprenticeships, what's the come of them? Are they going back to farms or are they taken out by other industries? And the second one is, you said that you want finance from the National Skills Fund for about 30 million rand, but in your other piece you said that the problem is that the National Skills Fund is increasingly being called upon to deliver beyond its resources. Now, as I remember what the Minister of Finance said, it's that all the CETAs is have got money up to 4 billion rand. Now, where is that? Is that in the National Skills Fund or is it with the CETAs? I see that you yourself has got something in the vicinity of 100 million rand in the back. So that's my question. Thank you.
Honorable Abrams.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, in recent weeks, we have seen some very untoward happenings in the agricultural sector. You've got the problems at the land bank. We've got the problems where the EU could possibly redline us. You've got our farmers that are battling and struggling, particularly emerging farmers. Now, what the chairperson had proposed are naturally long-term interventions. We need what I would term a rescue package, because we have at the moment people who have been allocated land either through redistribution or restitution or LRAD beneficiaries or whatever. And those people are currently facing numerous challenges and problems. What do you think AgriCita, along with other agencies of government, can do? And Mr. Singh has asked whether there is a round table regularly between various role players. Whether something of that sort is happening, or whether something of that sort can be put together
and something can happen. Then, Chair, we are not going to be able, I think our ratio of extension officers today in the country is 1 to 600. That's what we were told. We are not going to be able to reverse that overnight. But what sort of crash program? And if you haven't done a study on this, if you could perhaps send us a report as to the amount of funding that will be required to embark on a crash program to train people with some of the basic skills as extension officers, so that we can reduce that gap of 1 to 600. And in your report, if you could state that the sort of interventions that you propose could achieve the following within a certain span, time frame. Then, Chair, in your perception, and let's be brutally frank about it, let us not be concerned about the fact that somewhere along the line somebody is going to breathe down your neck or whatever. How do you rate the government as far as its priority with regard to agriculture is concerned? You know, from where you are sitting, from where you operate from. And then just one or two other little questions. It was reported, sir, that Ms. Mpho Matelemusa, the quality controller coordinator for monitoring, was retrenched in June 2006. Was there any reason for this retrenchment? Was it purely financial? Was it anything else? If you could just inform us on that. And then during the presentation last year, Chair, it was reported that future initiatives would include the establishment of the discretionary fund. And that was to mainly benefit agri-DEE projects, and that there would be another fund that would benefit mainly agricultural land beneficiaries. Now, whilst you have spoken in general terms earlier, I came in a little bit towards the tail end, can you report any progress on this? And aligned to that, in the annual report, it states that the current skills levy funding model does not generate sufficient discretionary funding to effectively address the needs of the sector. What sort of funding model would you think would satisfy the requirements of the sector? I mean, is it merely the 1% levy, or can you think of any other proposals that will enhance the availability of funding? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks for the Abrams. We have met with the various entities that report to us. That would include your land bank, Department of Land Affairs, Department of Agriculture, ARC, and all that. And all of them have got training components. They've got bazaaries for this and that area of study. I suppose that could be a similar situation in provinces where departments of agriculture would also have those kinds of interventions. But also besides this, they've got learnerships as well. So, I'm saying, where do you fit in there? Are there any sort of collaborations and sharing of notes about, you know, where should be the mayor areas of priority and
and all that. Because we may find that you project the situation to us and only to find that information elsewhere could prove different. The second is about this issue of habit. Perhaps it also relates with other training priorities. I suppose given the high levels of illiteracy, it could be impacted. But do you think for you to make an impact in terms of skills development, it should be one of the areas where you focus on? I'm saying that because the Department of Education is doing this. In fact, they're even reviewing the thinking around the APET model. into a basic education and training, removing the adult part, in fact. Now, how do we fit in all of that? And do you think that given the amount of resources that you have, if you were to spread yourself so thinly, you are going to make any impact? And therefore, APET as well, do you think that it's one of your core responsibilities? Perhaps the substantive question should be, what is the basis of them being an agri-seer? What is the basic money? And therefore, once you move from there, you'll then be able to say, what are the training activities that must define our response to that mandate? Because I suppose that if we were to act like, we're in agriculture, you see, and pigs eat everything where I come from. So, but if we don't become surgical and say, given the resources we have, in which areas of skills can we focus on and make an impact? That would be everything to everybody. The last issue is about the post-settlement support. The medium-term budget policy statement talks to this point. Now, Honorable Abrams was just saying there that at the moment you've got one extension officer per 600 farmers. The first question is, what's your role in relation to, how do you locate yourself in that program? The second is, this issue of extension officers, who is training them? What's your appraisal of an average extension officer? What are the basic skills that you need from an extension officer? Where I come from, there used to be some extension officers, and you could see people had standard 8 and so on. Now, at the moment, what is the landscape in relation to the skills profile of our extension officers? And what is our hygiene type of an extension officer? And who is training those? Well, I don't know if they still do exist, the agricultural colleges. I never hear anybody say anything about them. I never read anything
anybody writing anything about them. What do we do with them? Because ultimately, the issue of self development is the primary responsibility of the Department of Education. And therefore, the sitters are a transient intervention. If you understand what I mean. Now, how do we ensure that we establish those capacities where they are supposed to be? But in the meantime, intervene in such a way that, you know, our interventions become productive. Just press on the mic.
Right. Yeah.
Chair, I'm going to ask the chair and the vice chair as well to assist where I'm falling short. The first question with regard to the dilemma. Chair, may I start off by saying and mentioning the fact that you know very well that Minister of Finance made available, and I want to use it as an example, 7 billion rand to acquire land in terms of the restitution plans. Now, if you put 7 billion rand aside, I would guess our experience is you have to put 7 billion rand aside as well, that those people have access to capital, that those people have access to training and development, and that's the bottom line. In other words, you can't just say here's a piece of land. We all know it very well that if you have access to land, it doesn't mean that you can farm. It doesn't mean that you can farm. You need the additional support of having access to capital. Otherwise, you are setting that person up for failure. You need access to training and development. You need access to mentorship. Those are the things that we are talking about. That's why I'm saying, not just an issue of the agricultural sector. If we are really serious about these issues, and it is a national project, then we need to put these things together. The question was asked, given an example. Let me give you one example, a good one and a bad one, as the chair said, the vice chair said. In the Western Cape, we were doing training in Oudtshoorn area. The guys, 7 families, through the LRAF funds, they bought and farmed. I personally visited twice. The first time I came there, the guy said and say, hey, we need to transport the produce to the market. I say, let's first put that you have your produce ready, then we can look at the transport situation. The second time I came there, there was a second-hand lorry standing there. I said, but what the hell are you doing with the lorry? Because they also mentioned the question of a water pump to pump the water from the river there to irrigate the vegetables that they are starting to grow. The Department of Agriculture, let me be blunt about it, they gave them the lorry, but not the water pump. Now can you see the predicament in which we are in? We are not supposed, as a CETA, we can't do it, to supply capital infrastructure. They were given the lorry, surely in good faith, but surely you need first have to have the produce. Then you would need the lorry. So if we really want to make a difference, we need to work together. We are all making mistakes, and probably that is a good example of a mistake that has been made from their side. We also make mistakes. But we need a joint approach. If we don't have a chair, really, those people, we are not supporting them to the extent that we should learn. Let me mention you a positive example. We started in 2004, and I've mentioned it before, with 13 black ladies, 13, unemployed people, but as a joint venture with the Department of Trade and Industry, with the Department of Agriculture, with the Agricultural Research Institute, the ARC. They are earning, they have grown now to 29. They are earning now on average 16,000 rand per month. And you can go and visit it. Because it's a joint venture. The individual. They are growing the Barberton Day flowers. They are not yet exporting, but that is the next step, so to speak. And the reason is not just because of the support of the Agri-Sita. It was a joint venture where they have received and they are still receiving all the possible support. We are putting now, only now we are putting in computers, and I think, Chair, the question you raised is a very valid one. Only now we are putting in computers for literacy training. First, we focus, and that is what I really appreciate from what you are saying. We need a quick fix at this point in time. We are still operating, Chair, rightly or wrongly, the Agri-Sita, in terms of the SAQWA regulation, so to speak. You have a level 1, you have a level 2, you have a level 3 and a level 4, and level 1 equal to grade 9 and level 4 equal to the old matric. We follow that route. Now, if you take an emerging farmer, it's not possible for him to attend a training period of 32 weeks. It's just not possible. It's not viable. He's on the farm. So I fully appreciate what you said and agree that we need a package. It was about 4 weeks ago, I've asked the executive committee, Mr. Jack van Dyk was then the still chairperson, we had our board AGM 3 weeks ago, to say, let's try and get street fighters together, where we will get people to say, what do you need to make a success of your farming enterprises? What support do you need? And Chair, I'm sure they're not going to say they would need a level 1, a level 2, and a level 3 qualification. So, first of all, I fully agree with that statement. We need to do something drastic, and it's actually a lifeline that we have to throw out. So if I say we are setting them up for failure, Chair, it's fine that we can say the funds that we are receiving, that we can look after those who are paying the levy. That's fine, and I think we were fairly successful with those actions. But when you are looking at people who are not paying the levy, we were not successful, Chair. That's no question about it. We were not doing the way we should do it and the way we would have liked to have done it. With regard to the second one, do we have a plan to handle this dilemma? Chair, and the question also was raised, can we evaluate the government on agriculture? That's exactly the reason why we have put this paper together. And Chair, let me be blunt about it. We have asked to have a meeting with the Minister of Agriculture quite some time now. In fact, the Chair also wrote a letter to her. We are not successful up till now. And I think if I have to raise them in my personal capacity as CEO, and if I use a mark out of 10, I think in terms on the official side, we are getting on a regular basis, we are sitting around the table. But when you look at the top structure, Chair, very, very little communication with the top structure. Rightly or wrongly, and I'm not saying it's only their fault, but we have very little. And that's why we are saying, we are looking into your eyes to say, what's the possibility that we can force a meeting with the not just the Department of Agriculture, but also DTI and the other role players on a very senior level to discuss these things. We have answers, yes, madam. We have a plan to say, how can we look at these possibilities? But we should first of all talk about these things, because the decisions that have to be taken is mostly a political decision. If we have to say today, and I've mentioned the example for you, if only 10% of your income derives from your farming activities, I'm not asking Dr. Kreis for Nikak, maybe it's a little bit more, a little bit less, I don't know. But if we have to ask you that question and to say, is it worthwhile? Where should we draw the line? We will have to be, what you have said, very sort of clear on this. We will have to draw the line. Is it the responsibility of the CETA to look at land reform beneficiaries if we don't receive any funds? Is it really our responsibility? We would like to see it. We would like to serve that sector because we do have certain skills and knowledge and the qualifications. But, yeah, we can't do it yet, and we are not doing it at this point in time, or very little about it. Third, which providers are we working with? Chair, we have, as I said, 167 providers accredited with us. That is not including the agricultural colleges. you know very well, there are 11 of them. We are working very, very closely with them, especially Elsenburg. So we are working with FET colleges. So we are working with the full spectrum of providers. Remember, when we talk about agriculture in our case, it's not just primary. The relationship to the provinces, Chair, here, we only had one office, provincial office, that was in the Western Cape. Surely the possibility is there, the lady has resigned, that we are going to close it down. The argument is very simple. Would it really benefit the people in the province if we have a person there? It's costing a lot of money. Our argument is it's the same phone call that you could make to Pretoria, and we would gladly like to assist you there. But I'm sure you might have a different idea on that. ABET relationship, Chair, independent. Chair, at the moment, the lady there, you asked the question, madam. We are working with the Independent Examination Board. In other words, in the case of our computer-based training, the company who's offering the computer-based training, they don't do the evaluation. We are making use of the Independent Examination Board to do the evaluation per learner. It's costing about 120 Rand per learner at this point in time. So it is an expensive operation. The BWA, the bursaries, and you also asked about the numbers, Chair, in terms of the bursaries, we are allocating this point in time 50 per annum, 50 per annum. In terms of workplace experience, it's also 50. And in terms of the other one, sorry, let's get to that. The internships is also 50. In the case of apprenticeships, we are going to work on 250. That's about the round figure at this point. The ABET geographic spread, Chair, unfortunately you asked me that, but I can get it for you. Once you break for tea, I'll get you that exact figures in terms of the ABET spread. Remember, Chair, the concern was raised, we are only operating mostly in the Western Cape. Up to sometimes, when you look at seasonal workers, it could be as high as 60% of our income is coming from the Western Cape. On average, it's around about 38%. Coming from the Western Cape. And that's the reason why we are the employers, those who are contributing, those who are claiming, they are mostly at this point in time as a single province coming from the Western Cape. The short courses, remember, madam, we are working on unit standards. A unit standard is like how to erect a fence. That would be, as an example, 5 credits. Now, a credit, madam, represents, Chair, 10 notional hours. So if you have a short course of 5 credits, that would mean 50 hours of training, and that's on the basis on which we are working at. The duration of a short course, the shortest one this point in time, or a unit standard, is 2 credits, so that would imply 20 hours of training. And remember, we look at training as being 30% theory and 70% practical training. Chair, the question was also with regard to the research. We haven't done research, madam, with regard to the effect of such training. Oh, sorry, I think you asked the question, sir. We haven't done any research on that one. The feedback that we are receiving is that because it's very much focused how to erect the fence, we, after a person has done that course, our success rate is now around about 90%, surely that person would be able to erect the fence. The thing that is going with at this point in time, we don't offer life skills linked with short courses. And maybe that's a shortcoming where you could also link life skills that you could combine with that short skills programs. We don't do it at this point in time, Chair. The breakdown of the providers per province, Chair, the reason there also why you'll find most of them in the Western Cape, because this is where most of our business, our money is flowing at this point in time, but I can give you that breakdown. If you can give me 10 minutes, 15 minutes, I will be able to get it for you. The learning providers, that's the page 59 of the Chair. To evaluate the quality of learning provided. Chair, we did go through such a process, and I think in most cases we were fairly shocked when you look at the capacity of those providers. That's why we are saying we are looking at centers of excellence. In fact, 2 weeks ago I had a meeting with Elsenburg to say, if they could act as a center of excellence, let me give you an example. If one would like to offer a course, say, in the making of wine, then we will say, okay, Elsenburg, you know the tricks of the trade. Can you evaluate that provider for us, whether they will be able to offer such a course? But Chair, yes, I must admit, we do have our limitations when you look at the providers. Remember, coming from the Department of Labor, they would argue to say, yes, come into training and development. And you'll find in agriculture it's fairly easy. If you would like to become a provider in the bank sector, it's going to be much more difficult than to be accredited as a provider in agriculture, because everybody knows a little bit of agriculture and would like to claim that coming from the rural areas. So yes, we do have one-man shows, and some of them are doing well, but I must admit that some of them are not doing that well. The board members trade, and now let me get to that page, Chair, and we can discuss that one. That's page 61. Remember, in our case, at this point in time, a board member receives R1,000 to attend a meeting. The chairperson, R1,200, am I correct, Chair, and the vice chair, R1,100. So also, it depends on the number of meetings in terms of our standing committees. Now, the example that you have used in the case of Professor Don Prinsler, he's a board member, but he's also a member of the ETQA committee, Education, Training and Quality Assurance. So they meet on a much more regular basis to evaluate training programs, and also they have more meetings than the average standing committee. But, and I think it's a valuable or a good remark that you've made, in his case, he was professor at UNISA. So he is assisting us in terms of the evaluation of learning material. And that's why you find that his figure is substantially or a little bit higher than the rest. What we have done this year, we have now gone out in public to say anybody who would like to assist us with regard to the evaluation of training programs and providers are welcome to give an indication. We have gone through that process. I'm more than willing to show you the process that we have gone through. This point in time, Professor Don Prinsler, and let me give you the exact figure, is charging us R1,000 per day to do that evaluation. We are working on 4 evaluations per day. What we have received the nearest other one was R2,500 per day. So that's the reason for that. Nothing more. No other board members. We are paying them for anything, for any additional work. It's the only thing that we are paying them for is the attendance of a board meeting of the standing committee as such. Chair, board members, the entertainment fees. Chair, probably you have heard about that the Department of Labor is at the moment busy to restructure the whole training scenario. We are looking now at the model which is actually coming from New Zealand, the OFO, Occupational Frameworks, where we have to train people in terms of our occupation. Let me give you an example. In the case of New Zealand, you'll find that they will have nut farmers, they will have vegetable farmers, they will have maize farmers. We came to the conclusion to say we are training farm managers. Then you can put on as an elective, as an additional point. If you are a maize farmer, you can have some additional training, and that would qualify you, so to speak, for a maize farmer or a nut farmer or a coffee farmer, whatever the case might be. But we will have to change our whole setup. So we are busy trying to look at occupations. At this point in time, we have working groups, 19 of them. So the implication in terms of beverage and food is to such an extent, and that is part of the reason, Chair, the question has been asked in terms of the entertainment fees. Entertainment, in our case, it only refers to the lunches that we serve, the tea and the coffee and those things. But if you would like to have more detail, I'm more than willing that we can look at it and bring you the exact information on this. Chair, the interaction between the CETA Department of Agriculture and DTI, the question that was asked, Chair, I do have regular meetings. Let me give you a DTI. But that meeting, and let me be honest about it, would only be to say, we are supporting, I know last time it was about 27 projects that they were supporting. How can we support them financially, additional financial support? In the case of the department, the relationship is much closer, but I must agree. I think when you talk about these things, that there should be a better cooperation and a better understanding. But I think it's part of the problem we are sitting with in South Africa. Let me give you the other example. The biggest single problem in South Africa when you talk about training and development is that we have two departments looking for training and development. We have the Department of Labor and the Department of Education. In the rest of the world, most of the world, you'll find you only have one department which is concerned about training, because surely these things, you will have to look at it from school level, build it up so that you can make sure that you have what they call articulation. In other words, if you have a matric and you have an agricultural subject, at this point in time, you don't get any recognition if you even go to agricultural college in terms of what you've done in the schooling system. Zero, none, Chair, nothing like that. So this thing of not talking to each other, it stems from a bigger problem where you'll find when you look up, you'll probably look at two possibilities at this point in time, a labor and a Department of Education. The Western, the what kind of levels of support, the Chair was asked, what kind of levels of support, Chair? We have 49 qualifications in place at this point in time. And it varies from level 1, in other words, the old standard 7, up to level 4, and even 5 now. 5 would be a matric plus 1 year. ABET, what kind of coordination, Chair? Let me be honest. We have tried working together with the Department of Education. But, you know, you can't just use a teacher to train an adult. It's a different approach. It's a total different approach. You can't, you know, treat an adult as a child. And you'll find those practical problems. It crops up every now and then. So if you talk about coordination, Chair, I would be the first one in the seat I would accept to say, let's have one point where we look at ABET. You know very well that 6 billion rand has been allocated for ABET training. I tried to find out, no process has been put in place yet to roll it out. In fact, we are having a special board meeting. And that would be one of the things that we are going to discuss. Because, say, you ask the question, whose responsibility is it? I think, is it really the responsibility of the employer to train people to read and write? I think that's a right that you have. A constitutional right, at least, that I'll be able to read and write within the schooling system, which is not delivering, and it has not delivered in the past. The question with regard to the Western Cape and Gauteng, most of our members is lying there, so that is the reason for that change. The institutions and companies, madam, that we are referring to, in other words, the 3,527. In other words, it's organizations of farming and secondary side, it's companies which are contributing the 3,527. In other words, out of a possible 40,000 commercial farmers, out of, on the secondary side, only 3,527. And Chair, I think I'm right to say, you don't find companies who are sort of duck and diving. Agriculture is an SMME sector. It's an SMME sector. I mean, you find it's about 80%, that's the figure I have in my head, of the so-called commercial farmers have less than 11 people. Can I repeat it? 80%. The so-called commercial side have less than 11 people in their service. So it's an SMME sector. And that's why most of them can't meet or don't meet the threshold of 500,000 rand. The apprenticeships, where, Chair? At the moment, we are working very closely with the Mercita, the guys mostly responsible for apprenticeships. The question being asked, where do we train them? We are working this point in time with three FET colleges, one private college, Ukela, down in the KZN, and then also with the old Olifantsfontein, where we do most of the training. So we are working with institutions that are being accredited with the metal industry as such, and we are working with them hand in hand, so that at the end we offer the same sort of standard of training. In fact, they also assist us in terms of the quality assurance. The NSF, the questions that were asked, the CETAS has got funds. Gee, yes, we do have 100 million rand. But then you must look at our obligations as well. And that's the bottom line. And I think that is where most of the people are sort of jumping to a totally wrong conclusion. Yes, we do have funds available. But you'll find contracts have been signed. In our case, when you talk a primary agriculture chair, you know very well of the drought that we had last year. Now, if you really want to train a guy, you can't. You have to start from the beginning in preparing the soil. You know very well, many of the farmers have not prepared the land last year. So you'll find that there's a building up of learnerships, which people still have to be trained, but the contracts are in place. Yes, so yeah, CETAS do have the funds when you look at the bank account, but most of their funds, say, have been allocated and contracts are in place. Just for interesting sake, the Auditor General at this point in time don't accept the fact that you have a signed contract. They only accept it if once you have made a payment. Then only for them it's a valid contract. So those discrepancies we're finding with the Auditor General is very difficult to discuss in public or to try and get a reason, from their side why they're doing it, but that's the way they're doing it. A need of a rescue package, Chair, I can fully agree with that. We need at this point in time. It's part of my responsibility and on my table, and we will have to sit around the table and talk about these things, that there is a need, Chair. I fully appreciate what you said in terms of a rescue package. My personal feeling would be this point in time that we are saying, let's leave aside for the moment the MCF 1, 2, 3 and 4, but let's look at those things that people really need. And we do have experience where you can focus on those things. Let me give you an example again. We are training cotton farmers, a huge success, Jay, where we say we will bring you in for a week before you prepare the soil to plant your cotton. We are doing that at the Lowveld Agricultural College. We will bring 50 on, more or less number of people that I can handle. We will train them how to prepare the soil and plant. They will go back to their farms in Makatini Flats, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and they will go and prepare the soil. Then they will come in another week before, pesticides and those sort of problems with the hoppers. We will assist them for another week. There are four weeks, and you will find most successful when you talk about cotton growing. But that's the way we have done it. It does not lead to other qualification, I must admit. But the fact of the matter, those guys are surviving. Those buddies out of the sort of normal way to do that. We need it at this point in time. I can't agree more with you, Chair. The extension officers, Chair, I'm not sure how much time we have left, but we can talk the whole day about the extension officers.
I can give you the whole day.
Chair, extension officers. We realized the problem for quite some time. In fact, what we have done is in the process, it's already on the SAQA table. We have developed now training programs on level 3, 4, 5, and 6. We have the cooperation of all the universities in South Africa. They were part of that working group to look at the ideal extension qualifications to assist those people. You're 100% correct, Chair. You said it, Chairperson. Where you'll find an extension officer with standard 8. Chair, I would not mind if that guy, he or she has standard 8, as long as she has experience. When you get to an extension officer, you need guys who have experience. You need people
You need people who have experience. How can they convey it? How can they convey something just a book knowledge? Let me give you an example. We have the situation where we are paying mentors. It varies from about 300 rand up to 1,000 rand a day, where we pay persons who have been in the farming business, who are still in the farming business, to assist especially with these emerging farms. Where the guy said to them, listen, I think you should, they were planting vegetables, you should cover your seedlings with grass tonight. But I said, why? Just listen to me. Cover it with grass. And that night they had frost. And then they asked him the next day, so, no, I know this area. I could look at the clouds coming low in, and I could predict that we could have frost. Now, if you were just a student or a person coming out of agricultural college, there is no chance that you would have known that. In fact, even if you had known that, you should know that area very, very well. So there's not a quick solution when you look at extension office. But please, may I plead, let's start something. If we do appoint then standard 8 people, and I know of curriculums that have been appointed with zero experience, see, actually, it's not fair towards that individual to put him into that position. Because what can he do? What can he do? Very little that he can contribute. So extension chair, there is no quick sort of, remember, I can remember the days, and I don't want just to look back, where you could not become an extension officer if you are not MSc degree. It's true. That's how we have worked in the past. I'm not saying it's the only way to do it, but at least if we do appoint matriculants, we have, and I can email it through to you or fax it through to you. Email probably is a lot of documents which I could show to you. It's on the table of SACWA. I mean, you could contact Mr. Sam Isaacs at SACWA and he can confirm. Okay, I'll do that, sir. Chair, the question that was asked in terms of the AV, the skills impact, should that be the focus? Chair, as I said, we are going to discuss it on Thursday afternoon. Because from the CETA side, the chair said to you, that's a reality. I don't know how we're going to get past it. If you want to have a person on a NQF level 4, or NQF level 1, remember that's the old standard 7 on grade 9. But he's not literate. How the hell can we get him on a learnership? It's not possible because he can't, or very little, maybe functional literate. But you will have to get him on a standard 7. So it makes it extremely difficult to ignore anything. What we would like to say, we know, as I said, government allocated 6 billion rand to AVEC. Let's just get part of it so that we can assist. Chair, we don't want, they can come and control it, they can come and inspect us. We don't have any issue about it, but let's just do the job. And I think what you said is 100% correct. We need better coordination when we talk about ABC and what we really need. What is the basis from which we should operate from? Focus on specific areas. Chair, if we have to focus on specific areas, we are doing very, very little, but then we will have to leave it out totally to emerging farmers because they are not contributing. Most of the commercial farmers are not contributing. We have to ignore that as well. And we are just saying, is it the way to go? Would it really be the right thing for the CETA to say, we turn our back on those things, we just walk away and we ignore it, although we know the realities, the question that was asked, and the practical situations within agriculture at this point in time. Extension officers, the 600 to 1, Chair, I fully support what you are saying. I don't know. That is one of the major, major hiccups within agriculture, that extension services at this point in time is non-existent. Very, very, very little is coming in that sense. Chair, I think I've covered it. I'm very off. I'm not sure whether I've skipped some of the questions. My apology for that.
your colleagues can fill up.
Oh, sorry, the more issue. Say, may I ask, Jack, may I ask you to handle that one?
Okay, Chair, the Mpole Matela Musa case is a very unfortunate one. It was brought about directly by the Minister of Labour's decision to merge the primary and the secondary agriculture sectors. So we were given the tough task of getting one structure out of two who were designed differently, where on the primary agriculture side there was a professional job evaluation, salary and remuneration structures and so on. It appeared as if on the secondary side that was not the case. People were appointed and given packages totally out of order with the market. So when we ended up by not having to release anybody, we were able to accommodate everyone in a new job structure where everybody applied for positions. Unfortunately, in three cases, three staff members, all three from the secondary side, they ended up with packages, their existing packages, then existing packages being way above what the market dictated. So in terms of Section 189 of the Labour Relations Act, we entered into discussions with them to see how we can solve this. We offered them for if they were to reduce their packages slightly over a period, we were able to accommodate them. They were assisted by the trade unions, except in this one case, Ms. Matela Musa. She, although she was a member of a trade union, she preferred to use attorneys, expensive attorneys, who we believe gave her the wrong advice. They would not cooperate, and at the end of the day, strictly in terms of the provisions of the LRA, she was retrenched, given a retrenchment payment. She took the case to the CCMA. The CCMA commissioner did not agree with her that it had been a wrongful dismissal. She did not agree with the CCMA, and she took the CCMA commissioner's decision to the Labour Court, and the Labour Court also ruled in our favour, and that is where it ended about a month ago. So a very unfortunate incident. There was no intention on our side to let anybody go. That was our intention to accommodate everybody, but unfortunately not at the package that she was earning at the time. If that meets with the question, Chair.
Maybe just to add, Chair, briefly on what my colleague has explained. I was part of the discussion in terms of the Section 189. We knew that a particular employee of ours was a member of the union, but when he came to the meeting, he was on her own, and I requested a caucus specifically between myself and herself from the background where I'm coming from, because I'm also a union employee. I specifically tried to persuade her that the union must be present, because I said to her, in my experience, workers go to this kind of discussion on their own, and if they are not happy, they go out of the meeting and go to the CCMA. And in any event, the CCMA would want those employees to have witnesses to collaborate their evidence. And we lose cases at CCMA because the employee was on her own, whereas management will sit about four or five of them. And when they leave evidence, it just becomes a walkover. I said to her, that meeting was not going to continue before she either involved her colleagues or she must come with the union. And we postponed the first meeting for that purpose. But she came back on the second meeting and insisted that, look, I want to continue on my own and God will be on my side. That was the difficulty we went through.
So far, you don't have to blame God. I mean,
Chairperson, just the other two staff members accepted our proposals and retained their jobs. One of them has subsequently resigned.
Okay. What we'll do...
sorry, Chair. I was still going to be addressing the other questions. The gentleman asked specifically a question that I needed to address.
Okay. No, thank you very much, Chair. There was a question specifically which was saying, how do I reach a government in terms of the delivery and maybe the priority?
With regard to agriculture.
With regard to agriculture, I can tell you that there are very good plans in place indeed in terms of what government plans to handle the issue of agriculture. However, it has been our experience that those plans do not get executed in terms of the layout of those plans on paper. But also, it seems to us that when we deal with these things now, practically with government, for an example, on my side, coming from the union that deals with agriculture, it seems sometimes that when we engage with them, that we seem to get an experience that while they are good plans, why government may tend to portray a picture that, yes, they know that agriculture is important, for an example, for the poor farm workers, for the poor people in the rural area. But when we actually engage in terms of having to see that getting implemented, that does not seem to be the case. The government officials that we sit with them in those kind of meetings seem to have a very different approach. Very arrogant, sometimes. For an example, you know, there may be reasons why government decided to go the route of not getting involved in terms of the agricultural parastatals. The examples of the irrigation schemes in the Eastern Cape. We were hardly involved trying to say to government, save those schemes, because they are the only entities that are providing employment in the rural areas, where people don't have to move from the rural areas and their homes in the rural areas to go and look for the employment in the city. But the officials we were sitting with in those kind of meetings were very arrogant, and they decided to shut those down. In the tea industry, we closed down Sapeco, which was a major producer in terms of the consensus and tea in South Africa. We appealed with the Department of Trade and Industry, save that particular company. It is the only source of income for the people who were staying in the rural area. People were not staying in the hotel. There were few who were staying in the hotel, for an example, with the tea industry. It is in the Mpopo and also in Kaizen. They work from their own homes. They stay in their own homes, so they don't pay things for rent and for their own food in the hostels away from their family. And it's a provision of the source of income in the poor rural area, and with at least savings. And in fact, in our discussion, it appeared that if government was only to assist this company by paying, I think it was about 2 cents per kilo of the tea, but that could not happen. Those were closed down. So that, to me, and to us, it indicates that sometimes, whereas there are good plans, whereas government can talk, and you can be convinced through the talk and through what is written on paper, that at least there is a will from government to address the issue of the poor people. But when it comes to the implementation and to the engagement, at least I could think that if we are dealing with a situation where you hear a government official saying, we understand what you say, but these are the difficulties. Government cannot do it, for an example. Government cannot save the irrigation schemes for these individuals because of 1, 2, 3. Not just come to the meeting and be negative. That is our concern, that whereas there are plans, but we don't seem to have the will behind these plans to deliver and make the impact that is necessary for government to do. So that is the issue. And in fact, I just want Chair to allude to the issue of saying, the issue of us saying as a speaker that we are searching farmers for failure. I think the committee must take it in the context that if we would not say so, we will be fooling this particular committee. We need to say so, and we need to indicate the problems that we have highlighted to yourself, and you need to deal with them accordingly, depending whether you are convinced or you are persuaded. And if you are not, I think it will be proper for us to ask you to commission your own study, for an example, to see, to check, in terms of all the land reform beneficiaries that we have had an experience with, that you know of as maybe the portfolio committee. You will see in a case where people acquired a farm which was very productive, and look at where it is today. Some of them are dry, and they are neglected today because people cannot farm, maintain the standard where the farm, when they acquired it, it was. So it's very important for us as this particular institution, as a researcher, to come and explain this to yourself, that you must understand them. And when you plan and when you engage with whoever you are going to be engaged with, you must be fully informed that there is a problem, rather than for us to come here and paint a picture that all is good and well. It's not. That is all what we think is important in terms of us saying, look, we are setting up people for failure. But what is also important in overall, in terms of the questions that the members have asked, I think they must also understand one very important thing. It may be not necessary that it is our main brief to provide infrastructure like the CEO has explained. But when, for an example, there is a group of people who have got land through the process of restitution, we do not have to, as a CEO, come in and to provide infrastructure for them. All what we are required as a feature is for those people to have skills to run their production. And that is the part that we are playing. So everything else, for an example, we are crying because when you get there, you want to provide only this training for them to have skills to run their farm. You find the examples that the CEO has just alluded to. They don't have a pump. How do you get into the training and say, and close your eyes and say to them, I'm not going to listen to the problem of a farm. That's not my brief. I want to train you in terms of how do you run the farm. How do they run the farm if they don't have a farm to start producing? Because they won't be able to practice, because our training is based on the fact that people must do things practically, not sit on a class situation. Now you find that this issue of the farm is an obstacle in order for them to be there on the field, and you train them through the practical involvement. Now, these are the kind of things that I think the committee must understand, that our brief is about training, and that is what we are worried about, that it's very difficult to provide this particular training in the absence of all the support that government needs to give to these kind of people. I think those are the things that are very important. Thank you, Chair.
Let's have a tea break. Then when we come back, we'll do a follow-up question.
Chair, could I just say one thing?
Yeah.
This is a question of, don't give a person the fish, but teach him how to fish. But there's a tremendous prerequisite for this.
First, there must be fish. Yep,
and the fish was taken by cry already. And you're still jealous about it.
Well, there's no fish. Fish.
Yeah.
Thank you for the privilege. Actually, it's really a comment rather than a question arising from the reports and remarks that the team has been presenting to us. With respect to the confirmation they are making of a concern we've always had of the absence of a coordinated and integrated approach on the part of various departments of state on matters on which they are supposed to be acting in unison. And therefore, I seem to understand them to be saying, for instance, that this matter of skill development or training ought in reality to be handled by one department, the Department of Education, where people from the very beginning, from school level up, are given exposed to this kind of skill development endeavors. So it looks like, therefore, the question I had in mind was whether any attempts have been made by the teachers themselves on their own perhaps to meet and identify areas of common concern and also identify if there are any areas that they are quite, areas that they are supposed to be dealing with separately. We end up finding ourselves in a situation where there are cracks in between. And you find that something that ought to be done by one organization is left because the other organization believes that it should have been done by another. So my suggestion, therefore, if it is going to be done, would be that maybe an attempt should be made for some kind of a discussion amongst the teachers themselves. So that they can come up with proposals that they put forward their matter. I know, of course, that each and every institution, once it is in place, it wants to perpetuate itself. And in fact, that is why these departments of state are not talking to each other. Because the idea is arisen before that the departments of land affairs and agriculture, for instance, ought to be made into one department. There's no real need for the two to be separated because they are physically working in the same field. But that doesn't seem to be going anywhere. But nonetheless, if that kind of an attitude that is developed among the teachers themselves, I'm sure the political head of the department will sit down and consider that. Secondly, and lastly, the other matter they raise is that of their failure to get meetings with relevant people. I think they met in officials, certain high level officials in the Department of Agriculture, I imagine. But I would think also it is land affairs, because we're talking about land reform beneficiaries also. And I imagine also you must have been looking for meetings with the minister, and you have not been getting those. It happens sometimes that communication doesn't reach the minister, and we find that we are blaming them, or the relevant organizations will blame the minister. Don't we find that it's because the information was never conveyed to them? So my suggestion, therefore, would be that maybe not necessarily in this meeting, if they can identify the persons that they would like to meet, that is the minister herself, relevant issues, and there's been mention of the Department of Trade and Industry also. It could be there are others also that they would like to interact with it. That could be facilitated by officers so that these kinds of meetings are there. For some of the issues they are raising, issues that we ought to get answers, either from themselves or from the ministers.
Mamelia. Thank you, Chairperson. From what I've been listening, when my colleagues were interacting, it came to my mind that really we are not going to achieve immediately our aims and objectives. That is to see to it that each and every individual in South Africa has a plate of food on her or his own table every day. Because all what we are doing here is to try and eradicate poverty in this country. And these are some of the means of doing it. But the way I see things happening is that, number one, if there is no proper coordination and communication or of departments to work together to find a way of actually meeting these categories, the emerging farmers and the subsistence farmers, and also engage the commercial farmers also with their experience to try and assist these people. The commercial farmers are what they are today because they just took an ordinary Mamlidia on the street, put them on their farm, trained them how to use the how to drive the tractor, how to plow. They did not pick them from the university. But today these people are big because of those people. The commercial farmers are having all the skills that we require, that we assist, and they've got money to assist. So if our people down there, the subsistence farmers, who actually want to just to survive, because you cannot go for commercial if you are hungry. You must start being subsistence, having a plate first. And they grow and grow and grow. The other thing, Chaperson, is that our people are not just ordinary people. Some of them are peasants. They are sons of peasants who have been experiencing plowing for many years. Some of them have actually been to school from the produce that their parents have actually been getting from the fields. It's just to lift them up and make them survive. Even if they don't have the standard aid. We see the standard aid whom the government has tried so much to take them to school as extension officers. Today, I really don't know what the extension officers are doing at the moment. I don't know. I can't tell you. In my province, the time when Aaron Mosolidi was still an MEC of agriculture, he came up with a strategy of training the communities in groups. Whatever they started, they go and train and go back and go and exercise that. Every time they do that. So you can see we have viable subsistence from agriculture, particularly women, who do, you know, bread making, cattle, all goats, all those things. They go and train at those agricultural colleges. In my place, we have Dombisilike, which is actually training those people. So we are not worried about extension officers anymore, because from 1994, we have been saying, agriculture department, what are you doing with the extension officers? Why don't you train them and change the mindset of the apartheid era into the present era, where they can actually be extension officers for the people, not vice versa. But we see nothing is happening, so we just left them. We asked the agriculture department here, they said they are accountable to the province. So to me, Chairperson, it's just a junk one that we need to resolve. What I would, with the agriculture department, what I would like to encourage AgriCita is that maybe you should also go down much more to people who really need your skills. There are some people who have some resources, some projects have resources, that you they need some big picking up to actually make their projects a bit viable. They can move from being subsistence slavery to emerging farmers. They just need the skills and a little bit of boosting so that they can manage. But I'm quite impressed about your frankness. You know, I mean, you have been very frank with us. You haven't been so defensive. But I'm just saying, move more towards getting other people more down there to try and assist further. The question of additional funds, I think my chairperson said we will discuss that maybe at your near future. Thank you, chairperson.
Thanks, Mom Lydia. I think this point that you are making about the fact that, you know, our people in rural areas, they are not stupid. They have been subsisting and surviving on the land that was at their disposal. And I know many people who have gone to school, they are professionals, because they had to sell a cow there and so on. And all that. And at the moment, you know, what do we do when our people are facing all these difficulties, special services and all that, no support. just hold it there. Let me just take all the hands, brief follow-up questions, and we'll do the responses.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson, for giving me another chance. I've realized that they have been dodging my questions. But now Chairperson, on the report itself, on page 59, on monitoring. That's the question that I've asked. How do they monitor? On monitoring, you say the quality of training has been a great concern in the agriculture sector. The obvious challenge is that training providers are not able to sustain the quality standards. Now, you talk about quality standards here, underline that. If you talk about quality standards, what is it that you want to achieve? Did you indicate to them that this is the standard? This is what I want to achieve at the agri-center. This is my plan, particularly on farming. And you said they're required to deliver agricultural programs. Perhaps the reason being that they are mainly SMMEs, which operate in rural areas, their capacity and infrastructure to deliver good training is not sufficient. That's a question mark. I think you should elaborate a little bit on that. Now, what is your intervention? What did you do, having realized that this area needs attention? If I look at your list on the next page, of the programs that you are giving, you mostly talk about agro-processing. You talk mostly about grain handling, perishable produce inspection, sorting and packing of fresh produce, generic processing operations, abattoirs, and if you go further down, you don't talk about training on the field necessarily. Now, I'm concerned. And also, Chairperson, I wanted to challenge this thing of grade 8, was it grade 8 or grade 9? I wanted to challenge it. As Umam Lydia has correctly said, that our people in the rural areas are not educated as such. And if you talk about standard 8, standard 9, standard 10, you're really cutting them out from the onset. Now, my question would be, if you talk about quality standards, I'm repeating again, what is your plan as the sitter? Because if you have a plan, you would say, under management, this is what I want to teach the people. How to manage a small holding, how to keep records, how to manage finances, etc. How to manage the workers themselves. This is the plan, and this is what we need so much. That's under management. And if it's under food safety, food quality, you indicate what is it that you want the people to be trained on, under maintenance, problem solving, those sort of things. Now, your report is very quiet about this. You just talk about training, you talk about training providers, which are also inadequate. To me, it's very dicey. I think it happens as a recommendation. Because if I look at if I look at the report from the research sector of Parliament, they say here the quality of training provided in learnership programs has been a concern. What mechanisms are in place to ensure proper monitoring of learnership programs and performance of training providers, and how much is needed to do that? That is the sort of thing that we need to be talking about here. Sitting down and say, this is the program. If people are the beneficiaries are given land, this is the type of training that we want them to have in order for them to become entrepreneurs. Because we're talking about making people entrepreneurs and ensuring that they are sustainable. They can sustain themselves on the farm. They can make their life better through farming in those particular areas. But if you complain and say the funds that people are giving are not in use, but we can't give them the proper training, then again it's another waste of money. So those are the things that I wanted to ask again, Chairperson, to say, if they cannot give us today, maybe they must have another day with us so that we sit down and say, maybe we should even guide them to say, this is what we want the agriculture to be doing. Because you cannot have agro-processing if you don't have a production. You must produce in order to process. So, I would really advise that let's look at the service provider, let's look at the programs that they have, let's look at the qualifications that they are giving to the people, and let's say, this is what we want as the sector, as Parliament, and this is what we want to achieve, rather than complaining. Then this is the amount of money that we'll be able to do this particular way.
Thank you, Chairman.
Yeah, members, we must be mindful of time. So let's be mindful of time. I mean, the same question that we did ask about you looking at high impact skills, development areas, planting scattered and so on, and in the end, nothing actually happened. We are left with 10 minutes on this. How many hands do I still have for follow up?
I'm going to be very short.
So I'll give them 1 minute each.
Okay, I'm not convinced about the response in terms of the page 61. In fact, I talked to him on the tea time. Because if you look at those two columns, they are not really Because if you look at the document, it doesn't indicate how many meetings were attended so that they can correspond with the amount that is paid. They spent more than $500,000 to the board members. 526,000 and whatever, you know. The money that the amount that was paid for the 526,769 rand. That was paid for the board members. It's not on. The last issue, in terms of the sitter, I think we need to differentiate. I might be wrong. Your academic qualification and your skills development, you know, because I suppose that sitters, all sitters, they look at the skills development again, nothing else. I suppose that's the difference. The last issue is in terms of your job structure, in terms of your human resources. Page 26 and page 27. If you look at those two pages in terms of your job structure and you link your job structure with the salaries that are being paid, I'm a little bit worried about your demographics in terms of your job structure. And if you look at the ranking there, I think that those things need to be addressed. The last issue, your audit committee, I think it's page 54, if I'm correct, or that page is for that table. You see, there was one person in October, I think it was in October, at a person only. Can that be a meeting? The audit committee, one person, then is called the meeting. I'm not sure. Thank you, sir.
Chair, I'm not requesting a response now. I had asked earlier about some quick fixes, and I requested that you perhaps work on it and give us a report. I just want to re-emphasize that I would love to have that report before the committee. That's in connection with some urgent interventions, because whatever we are talking about here with regard to the work of AgriSita, these are things that are going to take place in the medium, short, long term. What we need is some urgent quick fixes, because out there are people who are sitting on land who don't know what to do, what's happening, what's going on. What do we do to see that something urgently happens over there? Little things like, for example, running, I know that various institutions run AI courses and, you know, courses for animal diseases and little things. These things can also become interventions which can help people in the very, very short term, like inoculating cattle and things like that. We have a number of veterinary medicine providers in this country, a whole spectrum of them, OVP, AfriVet, Papa Malan's organization, InterVet, all those people. Whether we shouldn't bring all those people around the table through AgriSita and see whether some of the little causes cannot be worked out to help people on the ground. Thank you, Jack.
Chair, we should remember at the committee that the AgriSita's budget is 136 million rand, and agricultural department is 2.6 billion. And what we're talking about is what the provinces isn't doing, what they should do. And maybe we should consider calling the provinces Department of Agriculture to this committee and ask them these questions that we're asking this today. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Man. I think the issue, as we talk to the question by Honorable Dali on the board, your board looks like a little cumbersome. How does it work? I mean, it's got like 20 board members. It looks a little cumbersome. Perhaps that's why it could run into R500,000. But R500,000 is quite minuscule though. But I'm just saying it's not a cumbersome structure. And the gender profile as well, you know, if we can talk to that as well.
Okay, thanks. Maybe just a general remark in terms of the remark that was made, lack of coordination, as I said, we fully support that. But I think that the challenge that was raised, and I'll undertake to do it, with the possibility to look at CETAs and how we can formulate the problems that we are experiencing, especially with the lack of coordination, I'll put it on the next forum meeting, I promise you, Chair, and I can report back to you. The fact of poverty and food on the plate. Chair, I really appreciate this discussion. I don't see it as offending. In fact, personally, I'm fortunate that I can take place part in it. Chair, we will have to distinguish it very carefully. We have on the one side, you have your production side. Let's call it then the so-called commercial side. Then you have your food security. And we should draw a very clear line. What is the responsibility of the CETA when you talk about food security? What we have said, that's what the lady here mentioned, what we have said from our side is to say, yes, we will put in place, madam, a unit standard that would help people how to grow vegetables. But now I'm asking the question, is it a responsibility of the CETA? Let me give you an example. If I am from the Mer CETA, the metal industry, or even let's take transport, but I don't want to mention it. It might sort of bring up other issues as well. If I have to put a unit standard together, how to train the oil of your car and replace the spark plugs, what would that do at the end? It would only be that you as an individual can benefit, that you might say, okay, there's not a need for me to take my car to the garage to drain the oil, I can do it myself. Now let's take that same example and bring it to agriculture. Whose responsibility is it when you talk about those things from food security? Then it's not just Department of Labor, it's social welfare as well. Because it is a social problem that we are talking about. And we will have to be very careful. Where do we draw the line? Must we put in, not 136 million shares, it's 136 minus 20%. That minus 30%, that is what we are working on. Where do we draw the line? If we have to put, and that's the question that the board is facing with. How many funds should we set aside to train people to have a vegetable garden in their backyard? 1 million rand? 2 million rand? Or should we rather use that money to look at these emerging farmers who can get up to speed as a commercial farmer? Those are the questions which we should sit around the table, ask it, be honest about it, be blunt about it, and then we say, okay, the one side you have food security, we fully appreciate, but on the other side we have the production side. Should we rather train the guy to be a better mechanic, or should we train people how to change their spark plugs and that oil? The extension officers, funds available. Chair, we are having a meeting on Thursday, and I'm looking into the eyes of the chair and the vice chair. We will take on the challenge. We will put money aside. I can't say how much, but we will look at it. That qualification should be in place by January, I would. And we will challenge the Department of Agriculture. Remember now we are going to put money into state officials, to train state officials. But let's take on the challenge and see how we can start a process to get them involved in terms of the training of the extension officers. I'll take it to the board meeting on Thursday and see what we can allocate and I'll give you the feedback so that we can really start a process and maybe you can help us as well. The fact of monitoring, that is the question that you ask. We have personnel at the moment which visited the providers. They are visiting the providers and they remember, when you talk about training nowadays, I think things have changed a lot. A unit standard has outcome. Let me give you an example. The first one I've used in terms of how to erect the fence. People would say you have outcomes when you have a, say it's a game fence or an ordinary fence. This is more or less the depth of the pole should go into the ground. In other words, the depth of the hole. Those are the things that is, we have written outcomes. It's not things that we grab in the air. There are written outcomes for each and every unit standard. More or less between 5 to 8 outcomes per unit standard. So madam, when we evaluated, we have assessors in place. When they evaluated against those outcomes. So there's no misunderstanding. They have it beforehand. They can look at it. In fact, it's also available to the learners. That is how we are doing it, and I'm not defending it, but that's the way we are doing it. The evaluation of providers, you are asking what measures we take. We have in the past, we have suspended providers. So listen, what you are doing to the extent that you are not meeting the minimum requirement, sorry, we are suspending you until the time that you meet the minimum requirements. And that's also, we have the role of the assessors. We have trained up to now about 600, although only about 200 of them are very active. We also have moderators. And I've done it in the past, in the previous year, where we sent out moderators to say, go and check independently. They are not a staff member, they are independent moderators to go and check whether the training was up to standard. But Chair, let me also be honest. We are doing that this point in time, say not even in the case of 10% of the projects. Remember, we run over 200 projects countrywide. We are not doing it. It is a shortcoming of the CETA to evaluate those projects on a more regular basis. And I fully admit that. The question of develop a program in terms of page 60, let me get to that. Remember, when you look at page 60, and when you look at the heading, it's the development of qualifications and human standards. You would remember that the vice chair, Mr. Van Dijk, Jack, said to you, we had a merger. Our experience was that on the secondary side, very, very little was in place. In fact, there were employers who started paying in 2000 and had not had the benefit until 2005. That's why, madam, we have concentrated on these unit standards, things that we should get up and ready. In terms of the primary, we already have qualifications, I think if I remember correctly, 15 of them. In fact, on our website, you could look at the learning material. We have even gone to the effect that we have developed the learning material for those qualifications. The question was also asked with regard to that unit standards. We have unit standards in terms of budgeting, in terms of human resource management. But what I would suggest, and I think, Chair, the memory is 100% correct, I would really support that we have at least another half a day. Let me bring those documents that you can have a look at it beforehand, evaluate it, and genuine. If we can make a genuine effort, we are in the process, because of the new dispensation of the Department of Labor, that we would like to relook these qualifications, and your input would be extremely valid. So I can bring it and we can pull it apart. We can even say it's rubbish, that's not what we need, we look at it again. How many meetings, Chair, what I undertake, but not later than next week, I will email you each and every meeting that has been paid for in terms of the board members. Because what I can assure you, we have only paid for three things. The one is we have a travel allowance of R2.46 per kilometer. If a board member stays over the night, it's an additional R100 for him buying a drink or whatever, glass of milk, and then the R1,000. And the fourth one is in terms of from down principle. That's the only where we have paid a board member additional funds for work that has been done. I will let you have each and every the document in terms of the meetings that have been taking place, the funds that have been paid out. There's no question that even if you want to have it audited, you are more than welcome. See, the fact that 500,000 is too much. See, remember, when you look at these board members, they are doing it. On the case of the primary side, they don't belong to a big company. They are there on their private capacity. So we are taking them out of their job for 1 day or 2 days or 3 days. Now surely we can't argue to say, surely they must be remunerated in some sense, compensated in one sense. And that R1,000, I think you would agree, really. I mean, it's little. So I disagree with the fact that R1,000 or that R500,000 is too much, because we don't pay them additional funds for anything like that, anything else in terms of the meetings we have.
So if you are poor like me and him, you think it's a lot of money, but it's quite a benefit.
Chair, I accept you do get the exceptions to the rule. Maybe politicians are. I would not know. You would know. Chair, in terms of the audit committee, I will follow up on that one. If it was, you know, that we have the background in terms of the allegation that was made or the remark that was made. The quick fixes, Chair, we'll take on the balance challenge and come up with a report, table it, and that we can have, I'm not saying on one condition, that we have a discussion on it, where we can also take part in it, make inputs or suggestions, or also that you can assist us in that question. The remark in terms of helping people on the ground, that's what it's all about. Chair, the CETA is about learning. If we don't fulfill our obligation, we are sort of
letting them down.
That's the bottom line. It's not about the Department of Labor or Agriculture even for that matter. The size of the board chair, we 20 board members, 10 from the employer side and 10 from the employee side. So that is how we are structured. Up till now, it has worked very well. Remember, in the case of the AgriCETA, we are very fortunate. We are working with institutions or organizations like the AgriSouth Africa. So they have one or two seats, and they make their nominations. We are working with NAF, the National African Farmers Union. They make their nomination. We are working with TAU, Transvaal Agricultural Union SA. They are making their nominations. We are working with FAO. They work in their setup. They have their representation in terms of on the primary side and the secondary side. They make their representations. At the moment, Chair Helping, we have 5 unions represented on the board as such. So 20, I think from the outside, might sound a bit big. We did try with the merger to make it smaller, but it was very difficult. But I think the board would gladly look at it and say, can't we reduce the size of the board per se? It's not a fixed number of people, but but that's the situation.
The
gender profile.
The gender profile, Chair, luckily at the moment we have 1, 2 lady members, Chair.
4.
Dai, Jackie Pulani. Elizabeth Fort,
Chair, the executive committee, which is the main functioning body, is exactly 50-50. There are 3 ladies on it and 3 gentlemen.
But you see, the red cafe doesn't deal with the gender profile of the board itself. So let's look at that as well.
I hear what you're saying.
Chairman, just on that point, that of course is subject to the nominating parties making the right nominations. The AgriCETA cannot prescribe who should be.
Can you just bring it to the attention of the nominating party?
Well, do, Chair.
So take that into account. Okay, I also just wanted to add, for an example, the concern from the members on the issue of literacy, it has been covered, but I just want to highlight the fact that you have raised the question in terms of there are many other institutions that are involved in terms of either training and the linkage. The very concern that has been raised here, I wanted to highlight it, to point out that as we see it, there is a set standard in terms of the National Skills Development Strategy. What are we supposed to deliver? And when we have to deliver that, we're delivering to the sector and to the people that are there in the sector. The first thing you find out is that those people are illiterate. You might come in the angle of saying, if you talk about these matters of literacy, you are excluding our people. They can farm. But we need a certain level of grade
But in terms of the visa, because of the specific criteria set by the National Food Strategy, before you get them to the training that you are supposed to deliver, they must be able to read and write. And therefore you have to put them on this. We are not excluding them, but we are forced to put them on the training at the level of APEC for that matter. So it's not an issue of saying when we talk about the literacy and the level, we are saying this is the criteria we want and we are using the criteria to exclude it. But we are saying that is why APEC is a major issue for us in this sense. That's very important to look at that angle because we cannot do away with it. If we do away with APEC as such, we are going to be neglecting the people that can pass, that are willing to pass, but who have not gone to school. At least start by putting them on an APEC program, and then they can be able to take any other course, a short course or an energy for that matter, and then they will continue farming and manage their own farm in terms of things like the
You see, the issue there, Mr. Kumar, is that why is it that you have to pay for it? You know, the Department of Education has got a budget for them. That's the point I'm making, and I'm saying that through your budget, of course, to say, but what are the areas of high impact, you know? And target those that is scattered through your money all over the place. That's the point I'm making.
No, quite correct.
But otherwise, thank you very much.
Yes.
So, members, we're a little bit pressed with time. Tima, Christina, thanks for coming. And I'm sure, as you can see, there are still some issues that we need to have much further conversation about. In the 3 hours, 10 minutes that we had, we could not exhaust. We could not exhaust them. Perhaps in the new year, we may have to look at much more regular interaction so that when we meet, some of the issues could have been addressed. Thank you.